Blog Talk Radio.
You think they really ready for you now? You think that there'll be many of you now? Do you really think they ready for you now?
Marvin didn't try to be magic or charismatic at all. He just was. Even when he sung the national anthem, I mean, it was Marvin Gaye. You know, it was just unique. It was special.
Can you see by the dawn's early light what so proudly we hailed at the twilight
Should you be so foolish as to have just joined us is Ray Charles.
Hello. All right. 3, 4.
I got something, yo, in my bones. Make me want to shout hallelujah. And I want to sing along. Lift every voice and sing, till I didn't ever ring. Ring with the harmony, oh, liberty. Let our rejoices rise high. Love has a joy to forever.
benefit, and the people, we wanted Dr. Angelou to be there because I was about to perform, and I think my mother came up with the idea. I was like, no way we can get in touch with Dr. Angelou, and we did. And ironically, that day, to make it short and brief, I got to go to a home in Harlem, and we sat down and we talked, and she started, you know, just, I guess she was checking me out to see if she was going to roll with it, you know, like checking
sure
out,
he was
like, yeah, making sure I was good. And one of the most divine things where I knew I was in the right place and God had sent me, I went to the barbershop before I went to see Dr. Angelou. I had to look good going to see her.
Yes, sir.
I left out of that barbershop. 2 minutes later, some people came and shot up the barbershop.
Oh, you're kidding.
I'm at Dr. Angelou's house meeting with her.
Wow.
And that's where I was supposed to meet. God put me there, so that's how I met Dr. Angelou.
Wow.
I had heard I've come and I had heard some of his music, his art, and I'm an admirer, and I thought if I could talk to this young man and find out is that really who he is, and it was my delight to be asked to do so, and we liked each other a lot. And courage is the most important of all the virtues. Because without courage, you can't practice any other virtue consistently.
Sure.
You can be anything erratically, kind, true, fair, generous, blah, blah. But what I've seen in common is that he has courage all the time. He has enough courage to stand in front of young people and do his hip hop. He has enough courage to stand on the silver screens and do it. Enough courage to show that he's an African-American man with some grace. He's not ashamed to be gracious. It takes courage.
Yes. Yeah. How important is this? I mean, obviously the work of, that you're doing through the foundation itself is important. How important also is it to bridge the generational gap, you know, because especially in hip-hop for so long, we've had this issue where, you know, the older folks don't get it, you know, what we're doing. And now as we have gotten older, you know what I'm saying, we're grown-ups, we're parents, we're all that stuff now, you know. How are you all, how important is that to have that dialogue between our generations?
The one beautiful thing and the incredible thing is, you know, Dr. Maya Angelou, she transcends age and time periods, you know, like, it's a spirit, her spirit will be here forever. Like, what she has contributed to this world, it will last in the universe for good. So, you know, even if she wasn't sitting here with me and, you know, with the hip-hop crowd, still my daughter is studying her in school.
Certainly.
You know, so
certainly.
It's still like she's already present amongst that generation and all generations. But, you know, being able to connect like this is, it also shows the bond, it shows the relationship, and it shows that it is truly like a unity and a connection, you know, and there's no separation. Like, was she, what they call you, the godfather, the godmother of, the
godmother of American hip hop.
All right, let's go. You got the new hot stuff for us?
No, it's fabulous, because it has been my blessing to have had some impact on Richard Pryor.
Sure.
Tupac Shakur. Dave Chappelle.
Speak on it.
It's been my blessing to have some impact on Chris Rock. And thank God, with Common. The truth is, we make a mistake when we think that generations can be separated.
Thank you.
The truth is, you need me so that I have shoulders you can stand on.
Thank you.
And you need me so that you have shoulders somebody else can stand on. We are one. And to separate us and decide that we'll be polarized is ridiculous, it's stupid, and it's dangerous. I am responsible to that 5-year-old, that 15-year-old, that 30-year-old, that 55. I'm responsible to you. And I try to live my life as a responsible teacher, giver. Yes, I try to live my life. So that I will encourage Common to live his life better. And this is what he's doing with Common Ground Foundation. He's living his life so that younger people can stand on his shoulders. That's about right.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Hold 1 second, please. Defender is here.
Defender.
Chicago Defender is here.
Oh, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Oh, dear. The Chicago Defenders, yeah, I must say this, and I'd like to say it for the recording. I grew up in a little village in Arkansas, smaller than this hotel. And my grandmother didn't take the weekly newspaper in the village because she said it was written by white people for white people. But we did take the Chicago Defender and the Pittsburgh Courier, two African-American newspapers. I'm talking about in the 30s, when the Chicago Defender had the Bud Billiken newspaper and the parade. I couldn't imagine there were that many black people in the world. But we received the Chicago Defender, and I learned all my facts and even some of my truth from the Chicago Defender. And I later wrote a screenplay, and a character in my screenplay was told the information was in the New York Times and Time Magazine. Didn't you read it? And my character said, if it wasn't in Ebony and Jet in the Chicago Defender, it didn't happen. So I love that newspaper. I have been raised on it.
Talk about.
Thank you.
How to influence our movement and not have this in our community by Bible. But there's a lot of stuff we're going to talk about in Black Music Month about black people. So stay ahead. We're going to, Evan, I think I left that piece in there. You need to bring it to me. We're going to, I might have it. Here it is right here. Today is the day, the anniversary of the Tulsa Massacre. That happened in 1921, May 31st, 1921, in Tulsa, Oklahoma, as this government destroyed Black Wall Street, as you call it. So we're going to be examining that today. I told you last week to study and look it up. You know, they have this film I call Before They Die. And since we made that, so many have died. So many of them have died since we made that. And they keep dying. If you ever get that film, if you had a chance to review it, you'll see that I played a major role in that, fighting with the Tulsa and dealing with that. So we're going to be talking to Dr. Olivia. She's 90-some years old, one of the Tulsa survivors. They're all dying off, you know. You might remember Otis Clark. He died waiting. You know, we went to... We filed at the Supreme Court for Tulsa. We were in court in Tulsa, Oklahoma. I always remember And when the hearing was going on, and the judge asked them, they had put this commission together. And I got to remember, I'm going to find this state rep who fought for a long time for the Tulsa. That's when it first came to my attention. And then, of course, Dr. Ogletree. And they had the nerve to sit there and tell those people, you should have filed during the Civil Rights, when the Civil Rights Bill was passed. And they used Dr. Franklin, Pope Franklin's book, to show how prosperous blacks have been in spite of what happened to them. And why am I saying all this? Also, the Tulsa survivors, before they die group, have a petition before Congress and the federal government. And that petition we had even before we elected our black president. And it was kind of moving forward. But everything, as I told you, stood still. The reason stuff stood still, well, according to some, Nancy Pelosi, as a leader, told them they couldn't bring all that stuff up. And, of course, the black folks acquiesced to it because you had Ron Emanuel as chief of staff and all of effing that black stuff and all of that. But you had, so that petition is still before Congress. We're fighting for the Dream Act and all that, but you have the survivors dying every day, and they have not been compensated or paid reparation. As we talk about reparation, that's some we all should be rallying around the Tulsa. I went out there and they invited me. Tree asked me to come out, and we'll talk about that a little bit more later. Attorney Ogletree said, "I need you to come out there again. Tulsa people are getting kind of tired and disgruntled, and they just need someone to push them on." So I went out and I spoke to them, but I told them that they gave me energy where I was supposed to be giving them someone. I saw all these seniors out there still fighting and telling their story. So today's supposed to be Tulsa Day. We're going to be talking to Dr. Olivia, who was a teacher. She was in the service. She's a professor. And we're going to talk to her. And we're going to talk briefly and let Attorney Gail Wright give us an update on the Tulsa for a few minutes before we begin to talk to Dr. Olivia. This show is dedicated to Otis Clark. He was something else. I call him my little boyfriend, who went on and passed away. He was 109 years old when he died. Lucille Finger died. Ms. Young, all these folks have died since we've been fighting for reparation for Tulsa. And you all sitting around talking about, we need to do something. That's something the whole community and the whole black community could be fighting for. Why are you talking about Black Wall Street? It's interesting, because John Rogers' family come out of Tulsa. His family's business got bombed. And one of the things, they all scattered. I remember having John Rogers at one of our reparation conventions. He talked about how his relatives and everybody went into the shadow. They were scared to say who they was because they thought they were begotten. And they really didn't, until that commission, those people who fought, they didn't come out of the shadow. So we will be talking to the Tulsa people today. And I'm going to try to let them stay on long enough to get some questions. But we have to remember that Miss Olivia is in her 90s. Dr. Olivia is in her 90s, but we're going to keep her as long as we can and have questions. 1,500 residents, 15,000 residents was in Tulsa, 12,000 houses, 1,200 houses got burned. They had office buildings, restaurants, churches, schools. Everything you could name should be in a black community. And we're going to talk about that some more, too, at some point. You know, what's interesting when I was out there and I was listening to some of the ladies and some of the people talking about how American government, how they went up in the sky and they was dropping bombs down on them. When you read, you drop a bomb on us by the Gap, they come out of Greenwood. They was dropping bombs from the sky, putting folks in pig pens, shooting people, burning up folks' houses. And the government had a part of that. The government have always fought black people. Everything we've gotten in this country, blacks have had to fight for. We've never been given anything in our hand. Then all those all those gains we made, that all those gains we made have slowly been taken away from us while some of these folks right here interpreting stuff. I heard, well, you know, and I'll talk about, because, you know, cowards interpret because they don't have to fight. They talk about what the old folks did and what these folks did. And as long as they can talk and not work, they need to be leaving something behind so my grandchildren can talk about it. But when you look at those people who saw how, see, one of the reasons the men stood up, and we're going to talk about that too. That's how the riot really broke out when this young man was getting on the elevator. He stumbled and touched this white woman. And they went crazy. And they was going to lynch him. And those men, black men, back in the 20s, 1921, not 2014 when y'all supposed to be free. They stood and they said, oh, no, you're not going to lynch him. And they put a wall, and that's how it broke out. Had they gone on and let them lynch the man and they got quiet and went in their little house thinking everybody going to touch them, the riot might not have happened. But because they stood as black men, not talk about what folks should be doing, but actually stood as black men, the riot broke out. They said, oh, no, you're not lynching nobody here today. And you got to remember, most of those men have been to the service, which is a whole other question about black folks going in the service and getting benefits of coming out and doing things. So we're going to be talking to Dr. Olivia. I had so many different ones I could have talked to, but she's very articulate. And I might do a part two on this at another time, because it's a lot to be talked about. But there's also a lot to do. There's a petition before Congress. You go online, you can find it before they die. And y'all run around talking about, well, we had something to work on or had something to do, and black folks, you need to get some economic development, and black folks have not even studied the economic development that black folks have had in this country and how this country and this government and these people in this country just took it away from us and still consistently taking it away. But as long as you blame yourself, then you're not going to fight. If you're going to fight each other because you think we're responsible for the condition we're in, and I submit to you that we're not. There is certainly a conspiracy. And every time we move forward, we take one step forward, they push us back three steps. So that's what we're going to be talking about today. And I was asked by Macy and a few others, even though I told y'all this was going to be about the Tulsa, but I have to. The Universal Negro Improvement Association and African Community League, they have General Degrau, Jabay of the UNIA. We have someone who's going to be coming in talking about the UNIA for a few minutes, and then we'll switch. President General is going to be here. So we're going to let him speak at 6:30 for a few minutes, and then we're going to try to get him back to the Tulsa. I'm just sorry I can't talk to him longer. If it had been another time, we could, but it's all, you know, we're going to see what we can do here. Okay, I want you to wake everybody up because it's going to be interesting today. And I want you to start Googling and seeing what all you can find on Tulsa and see, because we're going to really focus on the Tulsa community today. And we're going to talk briefly to Singra Bay, President General of UNIA, you know, United Negro Improvement Association, an organization that was started by Garvey. You know, it was a whole, and in fact, Mason and all of them were part of UNIA. I was part of the MIA, Montgomery Improvement Association in Montgomery. And I want you to wake up everybody, tell them get their coffee, get their tea, and I want them to come on back. I think it's the centennial of the UNIA. And come on back and talk to us, because we got a lot to talk about. We really want to get into this Black Wall Street. We're going to talk to the UN. We're going to talk up to the UNIA briefly for a few minutes. Okay. You listen to Talk of Chicago 69WVON. Our number is 773-591-1690. We're streaming live on www.wvon.com. We're on iHeartRadio. We're on Blog Talk. We're tweeting y'all, especially every kid. We're also on Facebook. And I'll talk later. Thank y'all, all y'all who voted for me for the Steve Harvey Community Impact Award. I didn't win, but it's all right. I sure got a lot of votes from y'all from the Chicago community and from all over the country, really. But they have been pumping theirs up for a few weeks, and B103, we just started ours one day. But a lot of y'all voted for me, and I read all your comments and stuff that you said. Thank you so much. But it's all right. Next time we'll get more time, and maybe next time we'll win. Get your coffee. Get your tea. 773-591-1690. Come on back and talk to me. I'll be right back.
The Talk of Chicago, 1690 WVON.
Years ago, the family doctor was a fixture in communities across the country. He'd come into your home and personally treat whoever needed help. He was part of the family. Well, that wonderful practice is all but faded into memory. But you know there is someone who keeps alive the tradition of personal health care in the community. Your local Health Mart pharmacist. While much of healthcare has become confusing and impersonal, you can drop by your neighborhood Health Mart pharmacy anytime, where your pharmacist will know you as a neighbor, not a number. So even if a doctor won't be stopping by your house today, you can still stop by your local Health Mart pharmacy, where the tradition of one-to-one care and concern remains strong. Health Mart. Caring for you and about you. To find the Health Mart pharmacy nearest you, go to healthmart.com. That's healthmart.com.
Mozart knows these are so very great. Kids rejoice when Mozart's on their plate.
They know they're quite nutritious.
And so delicious.
They'll lick the dishes.
And soon you'll realize how impactful your kids in Boston and New York can be. Make more friends and express their individuality. When they learn to play the music, act or paint or dance or write creatively.
Hot from the toaster and filled with the essential creative thinking skills of an 18th century musical genius, Mozart Toasties are an important part of an arts-healthy childhood. Studies show that involvement in the arts helps kids increase test scores and promotes academic achievement. Feed your kids the arts. For 10 simple ways to learn how, visit AmericansForTheArts.org. The arts. Ask for more. Brought to you by Americans for the Arts, the NAMM Foundation, and the Ad Council.
Snickerdoodle shortbread, fudgy nut bar. How many treats? Snickerdoodle shortbread, fudgy nut bar. How many treats in the cookie jar? One.
Dad, you're supposed to jump over the rope.
One more time.
The smallest moments can have the biggest impact on a child's life. Take time to be a dad today. Learn more at 1-877-4DAD-411 or visit fatherhood.gov.
Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
You know that the ice cream scoop can make a child smile, and that by slowing us down, the traffic light can keep us going. You know that the lawnmower makes life easier, that the blood bank makes life possible. But did you know all these ideas came from the minds of African Americans? Support the United Negro College Fund, because a mind is a terrible thing to waste. Visit uncf.org or call 1-800-332-UNCF. Brought to you by UNCF and the Ad Council.
You got the camera on? That's got to be an F4.
No, man, now, pull over. That's an F5. Go, I want to get this.
Oh, that photo cloud's getting bigger by the second. That twister is huge!
Whoa, what was that?
It's the National Guard. They're probably headed into town.
Man, I bet that place is in trouble.
The National Guard is a unique force. Citizen soldiers who are just as prepared and committed to do battle with nature here at home in our communities as they are against the enemies of our nation. These are your neighbors. Men and women who work or go to college, have families, hobbies, live life to the fullest. They train part-time, close to home, and they are always ready.
More of them! Man, those guys are crazy heading into that stuff!
Hey, that's what the Guard does!
Do you have what it takes to head into the heart of the storm? Check out NationalGuard.com.
Sponsored by the Illinois National Guard. Aired by the Illinois Broadcasters Association and this station.
Welcome back to Science Today. And we already have our next caller. Welcome. Who's this?
Hi, I'm Philip.
Hello, Philip. You sound really young.
Not really. I'm 9.
Oh, wow. You're still in elementary school, right?
Does that matter?
Oh, no, not at all. What's your question?
Well, I know the molecular formula for water is H2O. I also know that hydrocarbon is CH3, CH2, 50, CH3. Glucose is C6H12O6. The general formula for an alkene is CnH2n plus 2. But what I can't seem to find is any scientific formula for Bob.
Bob?
My goldfish.
Are you ready for kids who eat healthy? Good nutrition can lead to great things. To find out how a healthy lifestyle can help your child succeed, go to mypyramid.gov. A public service announcement brought to you by the Ad Council and USDA.
At Habitat for Humanity, with your help, the numbers are adding up. 3 decades, thousands of volunteers, nearly 90 countries around the world. 300,000 houses, 1.5 million people living in simple, decent, affordable homes. But the most important number is one. One volunteer, one house, one family, one child, safe and sound, under a roof you helped her family build. Every 15 minutes, somewhere in the world, this story is repeated. One more home built, one more family helping to build and purchase their own home. Together we can eliminate substandard housing. Won't you join us? Support the work of Habitat for Humanity in your hometown or wherever your heart leads you. Now more than ever, volunteer, get involved, and help build it. Visit us at habitat.org.
Join the Herald of Washington Cultural Center as we celebrate June Black Music Month with an encore performance of Cooley High the Musical live Saturday, June 28th and Sunday, June 29th. For tickets, log on to BroadwayandBronzeville.com or call 773-373-1900. Enter code WVON for a special community discount. This is one show you don't want to miss. Cooley High live at the Herald Washington Cultural Center, presented by Ed Ford Jewelers. See you at the theater.
In small towns and big cities, from coast to coast and around the world, Habitat for Humanity volunteers gather with purpose. Hand in hand, they come together. They may be strangers or they may be friends, but they are all builders of hope and home. Hammers are raised, bricks are laid, dreams take shape, and another family finds shelter in a home they help build. Through their time and talents, Habitat for Humanity volunteers are helping change lives for the better, and in the process, maybe even changing their own lives as well. Together, we can eliminate substandard housing. Won't you join us? Support the work of Habitat for Humanity in your community or wherever your heart leads you. Now more than ever, please volunteer, get involved, and help build it. Visit us at habitat.org.
How do you wake up the entire African-American community to the hidden issue of mental health problems?
It showed up in my life through one of my best friends. And we've been friends for over 30 years.
Share your story.
If we would have known earlier, you know, we would have been much more supportive with her.
Once I reached out to my sister, it got a little better. Once I told my mother, it got a little better. The more I talked about it, I felt it coming off.
The healing is in me, and the healing and the journey can also be extended to others.
It's our community and our mental health.
Giving voice to what you're feeling is part of the healing.
If you're strong enough to just open your mouth, that's all it takes.
And the most revolutionary and healing thing that Black people can do right now is to love one another.
It's time to share ourselves. Healing starts with us. Search online for stories that heal. A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, the Ad Council, and the Stay Strong Foundation.
You're listening to Coffee, Tea, and Dorothy. Tillman, that is, on the Talk of Chicago, 1690 WVON.
Say it loud.
the wall and working with someone else. Say it loud.
Say it loud. Good morning, y'all. Good morning. Oh, what a beautiful morning. Oh, what a beautiful day. Thank God for this day. And those who don't know God, I know something wrong with you, because it sure is a beautiful day. We're back, y'all. We're back, and we're going to be dealing with the Tulsa. I told you last week to study, because we're going to be dealing with the Tulsa community. We got one of the survivors on. But before we get to the Tulsa, we're going to be talking to Senior Bay, who is President General of University Negro Improvement Association. And I really wish I had more time with him, but it's a Tulsa day because this is the anniversary of the Tulsa Massacre. So I would have had him last week. Would have been good to have had him last week. I would have had more time for y'all to take questions. He's a motivational speaker, committed to the work of the ancestors and education and advance of our children. He retired from the National Association of Social Workers in 2008. President General Bay is currently self-employed and humble, serving his mission. And we're going to talk to him very briefly this morning. But we will be talking to Tulsa, where today is the anniversary commemoration of the massacre that took place in Tulsa, Oklahoma, May 2, 1921. May 31st, and we're going to be talking to some of the survivors. As you all know, I worked very hard with those survivors, and it's so sad while we're talking that this country have not dealt with nor recognized nor paid reparation, and not that they have not been active. And we were really active. We was pushing it real hard just before that 2-8 election. We had really, and we'll talk about that more. You know, we went up, we took the Tulsa people to Washington. We did a whole lot of things. We was in the courts when the courts told them that they should have filed right the civil rights movement. John Rogers people come out of Tulsa. He got involved, and we got him involved in it because his relatives is one of the ones that was out there fighting and really trying to pull people together. But a lot of folks, Tulsa people, went and hid because they were scared that they was going to get them, you know. And they didn't come out of the shadows until later. I remember talking to John Rogers, and he was thanking us for this huge fight. His cousin did a lot of fighting, telling the story about the hotel and her grandfather and all of them and what happened in Tulsa, and pretty deep. The Tulsa story is interesting. You're talking about reparation, but this government could have paid and could have done something about this. We went to the Supreme Court, and we filed, and they rejected us. We were in the courts in Tulsa, and it was really funny. You should have filed before. And they used Dr. John Hope Franklin's book to say that, oh, they didn't do too bad after that, but that's a whole other story, which we'll talk about. But right now, I'm going to take a few minutes to talk to President Baye. I guess I'm pronouncing it right. Senor Baye, about the UNIA. It's the centennial of the UNIA, and I'm going to speak to him now. I'm so sorry that I don't have more time with him, because I definitely have to get into the Tulsa, but I could not let him come, and I could not let it come by, and we not talk. He was born in Washington, D.C. in 1951. He joined the UNIA. Oh, he's kind of young. So let me talk to him. I thought you was, hey, you younger than me, President Bay. So how you doing this morning? Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning. How are you? And thank you so much for having me on and taking time out on this very serious day in our story.
You're a little old young thing, spring chicken. But anyway, I really wish I'd had you last week or another week. I'll have to bring you back so we can really talk, because you know how I feel about the UNNIA, and I'm very close with a lot of people who work with the UNNIA. So you all are you're celebrating your centennial.
That's correct. The centennial of the UNIA. The UNIA was founded in 1914, of course, in Jamaica, and Marcus Garvey came to the United States in 1916. Uh-huh. And Tulsa, Oklahoma, we're very related to that, because a lot of the brothers and sisters who were in Tulsa, Oklahoma, who were pretty well off and moving in a positive, self-reliant direction, were actually UNIA members.
Right, right. Mm-hmm. You're absolutely right. Because a lot of them did come out, because they understood the struggle, too. That's why they became part of that.
That's exactly right. Mm-hmm. And now what we're doing in this 100 years is striving to rekindle our story, remind our people how important what Marcus Garvey and so many of our ancestors did during that time period, because in the condition that we're faced with today, we have to change the paradigms.
Right.
And reparations is a very important issue. We like to look at internal and external reparations that's due us.
Mm-hmm.
But we like to say we can't forget Booker T. Washington and say, where he said, cash your bucket down where you
right.
are, and that's what we are working on in the 100th centennial. We are working very hard all over the world to raise up the consciousness of our brothers and sisters, respect our elders more, respect the work of our ancestors, and most of all, plan and work better for our children.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, Booker T. Washington is misunderstood by a lot of people. If they take time to read that speech, they'll find out this man was really great. He just misunderstood. You know, this government and Europeans, they always had a way of, when someone is working, and even now they do it, working on behalf of our people, they have a way to ostracize them, to make people run from them, be scared to associate with them, or just rely on them, because Booker T. Washington really was misunderstood when he said, drop your buckets where you stand. The other thing you said...
That's correct.
Another thing you said that was so important is how we have to make sure, and I think one of the reasons is that these young folks, and not all of them, but because leadership is leading them in the wrong direction, and I don't mean all leadership, I don't mean blanket, but to remember, they say if you don't know your history, you damn well will repeat it. And you
that's
actually,
right.
You know, so that's why I wanted you on to just talk. You said you're going to be dealing with the trying to bring it to let these people know what you and I stood for, what we have to do to bring our people out of where they are today, huh?
That's correct. And not only that, but, you know, Booker T. Washington hired George Washington Carver. And we cannot forget our ancestral women like Anna Julia Cooper, Nanny Helen Burroughs,
right.
Ida B. Wells. There's so many ancestors that our young people have been disconnected.
Madam C.J. Walker.
That's right.
You can't forget her, because she played a major role with Marcus Garvey. She even hired one of his wives, and she helped fund that movement.
Absolutely, and it's so many, because the UNIA had so many numbers of people. And the interesting thing about the UNIA, it didn't have a class issue. We had people who were well off, and we had people who were impoverished, all working together. And so what we want to do in this 100 years in celebration is to remind our people of the importance of self-reliance, self-determination, and most of all, to remind our people God never made any mistakes. His greatest creation, all of the people of the world, are who made the mistakes and must come up with the solutions. Our great God has given us everything we need to address any problem that we're confronted with. But because we are dispersed and not unified, and I don't just mean in the sake of unity, I'm talking about unity without uniformity, going back to what they said in Indiana, is so important, because we have to collaborate. So all black people are actually ordinary members of the UNIA, and
mm-hmm.
that's something people forget. The dues-paying members are those who have committed themselves to the upkeep of the Universal Negro Improvement Association, African Communities League, and working to uplift our brothers and sisters all over the world. So I happen to be the 10th successor to Garvey, but even though Garvey was the president general from 1914 to 1940, there were a tremendous amount of great men who came after Garvey,
uh-huh.
and I was trained by Honorable Charles L. James.
Oh, yeah.
Much time here in Washington, D.C.
Well, I knew his daughter. I know Sister James. You know, his daughter carried on that work. When she made our transition a few years ago, Irma was really great.
That's correct. But the works of Dr. Conrad Worrell, the works of Bobby Wright, the works of Jacob Crumbus, all of those brothers and
Maceo,
sisters.
Now, Maceo,
were ancestors.
Don't forget Maceo because he's working hard out there.
No question. I'm talking about the brothers still with us, and I'm also talking about our great ancestors who were in Chicago, Illinois. Tony Browder, who came from Chicago, Illinois, is the ambassador of the UNIA of Kemet, Egypt. Renoko Rashidi is a traveling ambassador. We got a lot of brothers and sisters who are doing a lot of work, and the UNIA is working to collaborate with anybody doing anything positive to uplift us from the bottom of the rung. We have no business there. Our ancestral energy says that we were kings and queens once, and man and woman can do what man and woman have done. So there's no time for excuses. There's no time for complaining all the time and not coming up with the solutions to address the problem. Because as I said, one God, one aim, one destiny. God gave us everything we need, and we have to use our creative genius to find our ways out of this quagmire and change paradigms.
Well, you know, one of the things you said is that, and historically, in the black community, it wasn't just the UNIA. It was all of our struggles. I tell folks, we all came down different roads, but we had one thing in mind and one thing, one objective, and that was the liberation of black people. We ended up at the same place. And I think that's what we have to tell our people. We're not going to all be on. Our struggle might be coming a different way, but the struggle is for the liberation of black people. If we have that one goal, we can win.
That's right. That's absolutely correct. In 1963, I had the honor and pleasure of being at the March on Washington. So the first major person that enlightened me as a young man was Dr. Martin Luther King.
Uh-huh.
Then as I grew up, because I kind of fell into the not-so-straight path, I was able to be introduced to Malcolm X.
Yeah.
And when I read Malcolm X, I found Marcus Garvey. So, and during the Million Man March, I honored all three of them, and I think it's so important of what you said.
Mm-hmm.
There is one struggle. We have more in common than the minor differences. What we need to start doing is building with what we have in common and accept the fact that we may disagree, but never be disagreeable because our children are crying and dying all over the world, and our ancestors are still waiting and watching.
Well, if we could teach them that during the 60s, a lot of changes happened, in the pre-60s too, even back during Garvey days and all. We always had, everybody came down the same road. You got a lot of different roads, highways and byways, but we ended up at the same place. And that's what's important. It is important for the liberation of black people. We got to understand that. The other thing you talked about was the fact that it wasn't a class system. Black folks didn't get into this stuff until after we fought, after desegregation, they get into this. Because you would find a woman who might have been a teacher and her husband might have just been a sweep in the streets. And they married and they were together and they built, or vice versa. It was all about building the community. And it was never about, well, I'm this, you that. If you made 50 cents and I made a dollar, you made a dollar, I made 50 cents, we put it together too. And it was always with that purpose of building the community. And somehow or another, Hoover said, Hoover studied us, and that might be one of the biggest mistakes during the movement, is they got it. We knew them, they didn't know us. But Hoover studied us. Hoover studied us, and he said never no more. So he got into that fiber of why these folks survive and we have not destroyed them. And he looked at how we defined family, what we did. So they went into that. He went into our churches, our music, and our youth. So this stuff been designed, and black folks understand that, we'll stop blaming ourselves and come up with this answer that you're talking about. And that's what...
That's absolutely correct.
Mm-hmm.
That's absolutely correct. And even to this day, we have some of the greatest creative geniuses in the world, not just yesterday, but even today. I vibe with so many of our young people, and I know many of them have fell off the path because of us not providing what is required for them to know enough of themselves. However, there's a tremendous amount of youth that are doing great, great things and following the path of their parents, grandparents, and great-grandparents.
And you're absolutely correct. I mean, you're very correct, and that's why, but Hoover tried to really his plan of attacking our youth is in place. So you'll look at, you'll think that the whole world and the black community is coming down. Okay, I'm not condoning any killing that we do to each other. But if something happened to a brother, they won't say there's something, he crazy. But the time something happened to them Europeans, they automatically are talking about the psychological effect and what he was and how they was. And they move to deal with the healing part of their children. And they make us start go on.
Well, just like you talk about the Tulsa, Oklahoma situation, I mean, how they came and brutalized us, and actually that was during an era where all around the world they were still attacking and brutalizing us
right.
and holding us in hostage to being able to rise up and do for ourselves out of their fear for us becoming aware of who we really are, because actually we created everything that the world has ever had.
And
we've had our hand in building, and we can do that again. We just got to be very careful not to allow them to hoodwink us and to make us think that we are lower than humanity. We are the highest of all humanity.
And
that's no disrespect to anybody.
No disrespect. We're the mothers and fathers of all of them. You know, I got a couple of calls. I'm going to try to take just a couple. And then I got to go.
Okay.
I'm so sorry I got to let
I
you
understand.
Go. Because this is a due on the day of that I'm celebrating the massacre. A lot of black folks not celebrating it. But we got to do it. So let me just take a couple of calls. Mama D, you got a question?
Yes, I have a question. How you doing this morning?
I'm fine. I'll have but a few minutes and I got to let him go.
God is still on the throne. I just want to say this right quick. When you began passing out those petitions for reparation, I was taking names as fast as I could, but that was a problem. Nobody knew.
You got to do a question or you got to hold on. You got to have a question because I got to go.
Okay, that for the answer for us to come together is reparation. And
right.
See, I tried to tell people about Tulsa over 10 years ago. Nobody believes me that there was a bomb dropped on. If we can bring that out clearly, I think we all got something to rally behind.
Thank you.
Bye.
They also did it to Rosewood. Maurice, you got a question? Hello?
Yeah, good morning.
Good morning. You got a question? Because I don't have but a few minutes.
Yes, I do. The thing I like about you, whenever we talk about Black Wall Street, you've always said over the years, if we did it once, we can do it again. You still feel that way?
Yeah. But did you hear, we're talking to President Senor Baye. You have a question for him?
I understand that. I'm talking about Black Wall Street and the process.
Okay, you put him back on hold. Right now, Maurice, Maurice had to let you go because I'm... Okay, look, I want to thank you if you got a closing... something closer that you might want to say.
I want to thank you very much and your listeners for taking time out to hear us. I want to just say to everybody should be in a celebration mode, commemoration mode, but at the same token, a building mode and a coming together so we can do what we can do. And we can do a lot more than what we are doing. Like I said earlier, God never made no mistakes. We say, up you mighty race, you can accomplish what you will.
Well, I had the opportunity of being the keynote speaker at the UNIA this year, and I enjoyed it very much. I was invited by Maceo. Maceo is always working very hard with the UNIA, and these people work hard, so I enjoyed it, and I'm glad black folks need to know there are black folks out there like you. Our youth need to know, and a lot of them listen to me, that we are still out here struggling, and all we got to do is just grab them and move. And I thank you for your service. And what are you all?
Could I tell people how they can contact us?
Yes.
All right, people can visit www.unia-centennial.org, and they can reach us. And locally, people can contact either one of the divisions. Divisions Brother Maceo is in at 312-545-3792, or the division that Mother Myers and Emma in, 630-842-8918.
Or they can go to online and do what again online?
They can go online to www.unia-centennial.org. UNIA.org and connect with us with the Centennial and any of the UNIA divisions around the world.
I want to thank you. It's up, United people. We have to keep moving and keep going because we got a lot to do. Thank you so much. And next time I try to get you on and have a little bit more time, try to get you on at my 7 o'clock hour. Okay?
I appreciate you and all the good work that you're doing. You stay strong and God bless you.
Thank you. You can listen every Saturday morning either on iHeartRadio or on WVON.com. I'm on every Saturday from 6 to 8, and we be knocking it down black.
I got you in lockdown now. I mean, I've been listening for a little while.
Okay.
You may not remember me, but years ago we met at a black caucus meeting. But that's okay. I will talk about that later because
okay.
I've been checking you out for a long time.
Thank you.
I call you a race-first woman and a principled woman who speaks her mind, speaking truth to power.
Thank you so much. God bless, and we'll talk again later.
God bless.
God bless you so much.
All right, thanks.
I really enjoyed it, and I just really wish I had more time. And most of the people want to talk about, they wanted to talk about the Tulsa, which we will be talking about. I'm so glad President Bey came on so we can know the NIA is very strong. We're going to have, when we come back at the 7 o'clock, we're going to be talking about Tulsa, and I want you to get all you can. I'm going to try to get Reverend Walton in before we go to the break because he's been waiting a long time. Reverend Walton, I didn't want to let you go over to the break. Yes,
hey,
yes.
Yeah, how you doing? I just wanted to say how much we enjoyed, you know, my wife and I and my director, we enjoyed the fundraiser the other night.
Thank you.
Great for you all to really try to help the young people there in that area. Because, you know, I grew up in that area. I grew up over at 4836 State Street, and my problem took me to the Regal Theater. You understand what I mean? That's what got me interested in music, you know.
Yes. So well, I thank you for coming out to support us. And we're going to be taking our children to the Tonys next week.
Mm-hmm.
And thank you so much. You got a chance to see him. Shoka, I was just glad to see you, Mr. Walton.
Well, that's Reverend Walton.
Reverend Walton, I'm sorry. Please accept my apologies. So I was glad to see you. I was so glad to see you, Reverend Walton. Thank you.
And okay, God bless you, darling.
God bless you. Keep listening. I'm going to have Tussle on. Thank you so much. At 7 o'clock, we're going to talk to Dr. Olivia and also Attorney Jerry Wright, and we're going to be talking about Tulsa. Today is the anniversary of the Tulsa Massacre that happened May 31st, 1921, when the white citizen of Tulsa came and destroyed so-called Black Wall Street. It was Black Wall Street. Y'all be talking about putting something together, but they really had it. It wasn't talk. It was work. And the reason the riot happened is because the black men made a decision. They were not going to allow these white men to lynch this black man, and they took a stand. And this government flew up and dropped bombs on them. They put them in pig pens. They took everything. People fled. It was just terrible what happened. And, you know, we had it in different communities. Every time black folks do anything in this country, that's what folks talk stuff, but the descendants of enslaved Africans in America, we are due reparation, repairing the damage. We are due a Marshall Plan, all this other stuff. And nothing short of a Marshall Plan, it's baloney. Because this government have historically locked out, locked down, kicked down, lynched black folks in this country to keep us from getting ahead. We're the only group that was forced immigrants, the only group that this government historically and continue to do to write laws to work against us. Now, you all are following behind the Dream Act and all this stuff, but the Tulsa people have a petition in Washington. They've been trying. We were working very hard to deal with Tulsa. They have not been touched. Anything that was black in this administration did not get touched because all the energy we had going into it. I asked John Conyers, why didn't we do anything about H.R. 40 when they had the majority in the Senate and he was over judiciary? Well, Nancy Pelosi told him to leave it alone. You couldn't do nobody else. They will not tell no other group do not fight, but that's the way it is. So I want you to wake everybody up and tell them it's going to be, and we're going to be talking and dealing with this at the 7 o'clock hour. You listen to the Talk of Chicago, 69 WVON. Our number is 773-591-1690. We are streaming live, www.wvon.com. We are also on Blog Talk. We are on Facebook, and we are on iHeartRadio. Get your coffee, get your tea. Dorothy Wright Tillman, coffee, tea, and a conversation with me. Come on back. The next voice you hear, we're talking about Tulsa. Be right back.
WVON.com. The website. Check it out.
The talk of Chicago and the voice of the nation is 1690.
Men walked up and down the street. Wild men, old men, young men as sharp as mustard. See them. Men are always going somewhere. They knew I was there, 15 years old and starving for them. Under my window, they would pause, their shoulders high like the breasts of a young girl, jacket tail slapping over those behinds. Men. One day, they hold you in the palms of their hands, gentle, as if you were the last raw egg in the world. Then they tighten up, just a little. The first squeeze is nice, a quick hug, soft into your defenselessness. A little more, and the hurt begins. Wrench out a smile that slides around the fear. When the air disappears, your mind pops, exploding fiercely, briefly, like the head of a kitchen match, shattered. It is your juice that runs down their legs and staining their shoes. When the earth rights itself again and the taste tries to return to the tongue, your body is slammed shut. Forever. No keys exist. Then the window draws full upon your mind there. Just beyond this way of curtains, men walk. Knowing something. Going someplace. But this time, I will just simply stand and watch. Maybe. Maya Angelou was born on April 4, 1928 in St. Louis, Missouri. Still at a young age, her family moved to Stamps, Arkansas, where she experienced a lot of racial discrimination. However, while there, she managed to bond with her family even more and embraced her cultural heritage. As a teenager, Maya had a passion for dance and the arts. She won a scholarship to the California School of Labor, but she dropped out at age 14 to become San Francisco's first ever African-American female cable car conductor. After high school, she gave birth to her first son, Guy. In the mid-50s, she toured Europe for a dance and theater production, and later on, she recorded her own album.
The bongos bongoing, the drums drumming, and the maracas maracking as we get going with Miss Calypso herself, Maya Angelou.
In 1960, she moved to Cairo, where she served as editor of the English language weekly Arab Observer. Later, she moved to Ghana, where she taught at the University of Ghana School of Music and Drama. While she was in Ghana, she met with Malcolm X, and in 1964, they came back to America so that they could work on the Organization of African American Unity together. But after they arrived back in the States, Malcolm X was assassinated, and the organization fell apart. Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. asked Angelou to serve as Northern Coordinator for the Southern Christian Leadership Conference. She has served on two presidential committees, was awarded the Presidential Medal of Arts in 2000, the Lincoln Medal in 2008, received three Grammy Awards, and President Clinton requested that she compose a poem to read at his inauguration in 1993. She received over 50 honorary degrees and is Reynolds Professor of American Studies at Wake Forest University.
What would you, sitting where you are now, say to that young Calypso singer, yeah, and that, what would you say to that woman?
I would encourage her to forgive. It's one of the greatest gifts you can give to yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Forgive. Forgive everybody. Just forgive it. I mean, mind you, we ask the Creator,
yes,
to forgive,
yes,
our stupidest actions.
Yes.
Cruelest, mean-hearted things.
And say, God, forgive me.
Forgive me.
Or people will say, I'm not perfect. Yes.
Yeah, that's right.
Yes.
So then you forgive. And it relieves you. You are relieved of carrying that burden.
From taking a lot of interest in social justice and from having experiences in her past, Maya Angelou embraced her womanhood. In fact, her poem, Men, is about her first ever relationship and all the emotions that came with it. In 1936, she was raped by her mother's boyfriend, Mr. Freeman. After she confided about the rape to her brother and testified at the trial, he was found and beaten to death by her uncles. She didn't speak in public for 5 more years as a result of guilt,
and the belief that her words had caused his murder. This event is the basis for her first autobiography, I Know Why the Caged Bird Sings.
You can't forgive without loving.
Yes.
And I don't mean sentimentality, I don't mean mush.
Mm-hmm.
I mean having enough courage to stand out and say, I forgive. I'm finished with it. I had to get to a place where I could forgive the man who had raped me when I was 7 years old.
Mm.
And that was a matter of incredible mental gymnastics. And then I had to think of what I had done to other people and see how I'd been forgiven.
Although she had a troubled past, one thing is for certain. Maya Angelou's art, presence, and words have impacted the world positively, and they will continue to in the future.
Love me or leave me and let me be lonely. You won't.
They think that because I think that I am dour and solemn, not at all. I mean, just the opposite. I never trust people who don't laugh, who act as if they put airplane glue on the back of their hands and stuck them to their foreheads. What? No. Mm-mm. They didn't come to make a difference. If you've come to make a difference, you laugh as often as possible. Because the telephone will ring and inform you of some information that will make you weep. The doorbell will ring and you'll hear something. You turn on the television and say, my God. Pick up the newspaper. Whew. Walk in the street and your car has been stolen. No. So as often as possible, you laugh. Don't force it, but the Bible says a cheerful spirit is good medicine. And we are just now finding in medical research that that is true. It may be why black people have lived so long and have fewer wrinkles and so forth. Really. And just now, a medical research institute is named for me. And it's just now being established as a part of Bowman Gray Medical School. And it's the Maya Angelou Medical Research Institute on Minority Health. So we will study sickle cell anemia, high blood pressure, diabetes, and HIV, AIDS, of course. And what is this? What is the mystery behind laughter? What is it that it allows the factories in the body, the various glands, to create more endorphins which go around the body? I think of them as little visiting physicians knocking at the door. You okay in there? Would you like to have a couple of aspirin? looking after things. Fine. Yes, it's true. So I'd like to see lots of research on that. I also don't trust people who don't love themselves. No, it's very dangerous. People say, I love you, or I hate myself, but I love you. No, you cannot love a person if you don't love yourself. You can want her or want him, want to possess something. But to love liberates. And the African saying is, be careful when a naked person offers you a shirt. Thank you very much.
Or online at westernavenissan.com.
Years ago, the family doctor was a fixture in communities across the country. He'd come into your home and personally treat whoever needed help. He was part of the family. Well, that wonderful practice is all but faded into memory. But you know there is someone who keeps alive the tradition of personal health care in the community. Your local HealthMart pharmacist. While much of health care has become confusing and impersonal, you can drop by your neighborhood HealthMart pharmacy anytime, where your pharmacist will know you as a neighbor, not a number. So even if a doctor won't be stopping by your house today, you can still stop by your local Health Mart pharmacy, where the tradition of one-to-one care and concern remains strong. Health Mart, caring for you and about you. To find the Health Mart pharmacy nearest you, go to healthmart.com. That's healthmart.com.
Live from the Xfinity Studios at WVON.
We're your original social media.
Hashtag Dorothy Tillman on 1690, the talk of Chicago.
Days ahead. But it really doesn't matter with me now, because I've been to the mountaintop. I don't mind.
I've been to the mountaintop. Dr. King said he allowed me to go to the mountaintop. I might not get there with you, but where's the people get to the mountaintop? The key word is Dr. King said he allowed me. God allowed him to look over and see. And he thought that once we moved, we'll bring our people. He never expected us to walk away. This is a very special day. It's 7 o'clock. That's 7 o'clock hour, y'all. I want y'all to take a deep breath. Courtney and the one that you train in Ebony and wherever you are in the city, in the country, in the world, you know the 7 o'clock hour. We take a deep breath. It's that hour. Black. One more time, y'all. Black. Don't that feel good? Black folks is afraid to say black. Well, we're dealing with the Tulsa Massacre today. You know, it's the anniversary today, and we always try to make sure Tulsa stay on the minds of our people. When we talk about reparation and talk about all the things that we need to do for Tulsa, and being in Tulsa was really something to work with those strong men and women who were fighting for reparation for Tulsa. And to be in that court in Tulsa when they said, you should have filed during the Rise of Civil Rights bill passed. And we filed it. When we went to the Supreme Court, when we went to meet with the Black Caucus, Maxine Waters worked very hard. But, you know, it's so sad when I look at what happened. And I know I've been talking about all day what happened in Tulsa, Oklahoma, that massacre that day when this government dropped bombs and just burned up, and along with the riot, they burned up the whole community. They killed people. and the survivors just kind of scattered. And they came back after the commission. They decided to really fight very hard. We were very, and they've been fighting. And they have a film I call Before They Die. And a lot of them have died, you know. And they continue to die. And this government have not dealt with the question of Tulsa, the reparation to repay the descendants and those survivors. And they've been steadily dying. Ms. Luther Fingers died. She was 104 years old when she died. It hurts when I think about Mr. Clark, who died. The ones who are just dying. And this government, as we bring in, we help everybody around the world, and we cannot take a moment to look at this community, this economic base, this thriving base, this community that was working hard. Everything that we say we want today, this community had, and it was destroyed. And we can fight for everything in the world, but the country needs to be hollering about what's going on with the massacre, what's going on with repairing the damage in the Tulsa. And then Rosewood is a whole other story. So we're going to have an update today. I have two guests, and we're going to talk about Tulsa. And we're going to take a few phone calls from you, but we're going to talk about Tulsa first. I hope you enjoyed that first segment. It was a very good segment. Listen, Talk of Chicago, 69 WVON, our number is 773-591-1690. We are streaming live on www.wvon.com. We're also on our Heart Radio. We're on Facebook, Group Facebook, Blog Talk, Twitter, and you name it, we're here. And I don't want to take too much time because I want to spend these next 45 minutes really talking to my guests. Gail, good morning.
Good morning, good morning, and thank you for that wonderful opening of our day.
Thank you.
This is the day that the Lord has made. Be glad in it, and you have helped us to do that. So we're very grateful to you for this show and for all that you do to bring the issues to us and to make sure that we're not only aware of them as we talk about them, but we're aware of them in a way that will allow us to do something, change something, to be the change makers in this nation and in this community. So we thank you for keeping us awake and keeping us at work.
Thank you. And Dr. Olivia, Dr. Olivia, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here, but the volume is not good.
It's not. Let's see what we can do. I'm going to ask my engineer to help you. After all, this is one of our seniors. Dr. Olivia, how are you now? You're 90. How old are you now? My senior, one of those struggles. We got to make sure she's all right. You can't hear us very well, Dr. Olivia?
The volume isn't good enough.
Okay. Does that mean you cannot hear me, or do you just mean...
Yes, I'm hearing you when you speak directly into the phone, but when you were speaking to the world, I couldn't hear everyone.
Okay.
Word.
Well, what I want you to do, if we're going to work this out. You're here. How are we going to do this? I'm going to let Gail give an update. Then I'm going to come to you, and then we're going to just talk like we're sitting in your living room, little girl talk, and you're going to be teaching me something. So just,
yes.
It's going to be very easy, and it's going to flow very easy. But before we start, before you do the update, Gail is an attorney, too, civil rights attorney, and we're going to tell you all about her when we come back. And we're just proud to have Gail, who's been out here struggling with this, but she's also struggling on behalf of black people in this country, and we appreciate that in Gail. I got a little small clip I'm going to play on Tulsa. I want to play, Gail, then I'm going to come back to you, okay?
Great. Right. Sounds good.
Okay.
They tried to kill all the colored folks they could see. They tried to kill everything they see. It don't make any difference whether you're rich or poor. They tried to kill you if you was colored all down here.
That's Otis Clark.
All down here, they tried to kill
gun dealers. Well, they just was giving them out to whites, they go out there and kill your nigger. And that is literally what happened.
The Black Wall Street was the most vibrant and successful black community in America. There were children and teenagers growing up educated and affluent.
Everything was right there. Someone was asking me about going downtown in Tulsa. I said, I think I only went downtown one time before I was 6 years old, because we had everything we needed in the neighborhood. We didn't have to go downtown.
Because of the riot, the oldest building in Greenwood dates from 1922.
Black Wall Street Memorial.
Pioneer's Gardens, 1996. It's Wall Street. That's Greenwood Hill. Greenwood Hill is our Wall Street. Yeah, we live like we're Wall Street. Because a lot of folks, we're the oil city then. And a lot of folks come in from New York and Chicago. And we had a big time here on Greenwood. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. It's the oil country, right? We was all right for a while. We was all right for a while. And old Nick coming along and tore it up.
These kids watch movies at Bill Williams Dreamland Theater, the best black-owned theater in the Southwest. They shopped at D.L. Hooker's General Stores and watched him bring the day's profits to the bank by horseback. They received house calls from Dr. A.C. Jackson, who the Mayo brothers called the finest black surgeon in America. As teenagers, they frequented the luxurious Stratford Hotel and held their senior proms in its ballroom. They watched their older brothers and sisters propose in Williams Confectionery. They reveled in vibrant Greenwood nightlife that attracted musicians like Cab Calloway, high-stakes gamblers, and all kinds of entrepreneurs.
Tulsa was a city awash in oil money. It was largely in the white community, but it went to the black community as well, too. You had an explosion of businesses. You had an explosion of African-Americans running their own businesses, owning their own homes, building their own homes as well, too. But it's also happening during this great period of rising white racism.
They burnt down over 30 square blocks in the Greenwood area. Terrible fire.
It was for many years the best kept secret. Children in the white part of town grew up not even knowing that there had been a riot. The mayor of Tulsa, the first woman mayor of Tulsa, Susan Savage, told me that she was a grown woman, although she had lived in Tulsa and been born there after the riot. But she was a grown woman before she even knew that there had been a riot.
It wasn't until I got to OU in my junior year in college that I heard anything about the Tulsa race riot, and I just couldn't believe it.
A sort of culture of silence had settled down, and no one spoke of it, except in the black part of town, where they spoke of it in hushed tones and did not want to convey the impression that they had been defeated and almost destroyed by the action that was taken.
I was afraid for a long time and still thanking God that I was still alive, that my family was alive, and that we were all together and they were trying to start over. I say the reason our people didn't talk about it, we were afraid of it starting again. And that's what most of us felt. Why tell our children who were growing up and feel more animosity in their hearts?
An incident changed everything.
He was a shoe-shine boy. When he stepped on the elevator was not quite aligned with the floor, so he tripped and he fell, and he grabbed the little 17 or 18-year-old elevator operator. And the people who were standing there getting off of the elevator or waiting to get on said that he had attacked her.
And there was no dynamite in America in the 1920s like an alleged attack by a black man on a white woman.
Okay, we got to, I hate to say that, I got to cut it because I want to get into to Dr. Olivia and Attorney Gail Wright. I want to get into them. One of the things is I just wanted to play a little of that Attorney Gail to let them know what happened. I told them about the men standing strong, not allowing this black man to get lynched. They stood strong when they were trying to lynch the black man. Attorney Gail, you want to give us an update as to where we are?
I certainly will. I think it's so important to listen. I've heard that tape many times, and today is the 93rd anniversary, the actual 93rd anniversary of the bombings, the race riot, the race bombings in Tulsa, Oklahoma. The background of that, when you were listening to the officers, what happened was that you had men, strong, bright black men who'd gone to fight for their country, and they had come back from the war. And when this happened in Tulsa, they went up to the station where the black man was being held for allegedly having a touching or some sort of untoward action toward a white woman. And they stood their ground and said, we're here to protect him, to make sure that he isn't lynched
right,
like so many others had been lynched in Tulsa, Oklahoma, and all over this country, particularly in the South. And that led off to an accidental shooting, which led off to the riots. And I think that's important to say, what we were even doing overall in that area. Where we are now, in the background for, you've heard a lot about what happened and heard the voices of Otis Clark, who died in a few years ago at the age of 104, and you're certainly going to hear from Dr. Olivia Juliet Hooker, who is now 99 years old, who has her Ph.D. in psychology and is a brilliant woman whose family back then owned the stores. There were so many stores that black people owned and businesses, as you heard Mr. Clark say, and all of that was destroyed. 35 blocks, 1,200 residences, estimated 300 dead, 6,000 detained. People were taken out of their homes. Men were locked up and detained. They're looking now at burial grounds in Tulsa. At one point, they said they were going to try to dig them up, but I think that that effort has been lost.
Then they put them all Doug Gale, the attorney, right? They put them all in like a pig pit and just buried them like hogs.
Just buried them.
Just put
in the back of a truck.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right.
And so, and many of the issues have been buried, and the issues have been forgotten. You had so many things going on. At one point, you had a commission in 1966, a state commission, that came out and released a report in 2001 and gave recommendations, including reparations
right,
for victims.
Mm-hmm.
And there are hundreds of victims and their children and their descendants, because the movie As They Die is about as the people die.
Before they die. Yeah.
Horrific before they die.
Mm-hmm.
This horrific injustice on American citizens.
Right.
Then you had in 2010, that effort was lost. There was an idea that, no, well, what we'll do is we'll put up a park, a memorial, and we'll give some scholarships for the descendants of the survivors, but nothing much was done. You should know, too, that in all of this, the survivors themselves have not been looking for payouts and money. They've been looking for justice.
Well, you know, but, you know,
educational.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Before we got to 2010, you know, we were in Tulsa, and we went before the courts, and that's the, I was there that year, and they said that the Tulsa survivors should have filed right after the civil rights bill was passed, and they used them using part of Dr. Frank Hope, John Hope Franklin, book talking about how successfully they had been, and we did take them to the Black Caucus before 2010, and Maxine Waters got very involved in this, and we
right. Well, the case is Alexander versus Oklahoma, and that was brought initially by the late Johnny Cochran and Professor Charles Ogletree from Harvard University.
Right.
The case went through the federal court. It was brought as a federal case involving the civil rights era statutes and also involving the Constitution. It went through the district court, that's the trial court in Oklahoma, the federal court. Then it went to the Court of Appeals. And then there was an appeal to the Supreme Court of the United States. And that request to even be heard before the United States was denied, what we call a writ of certiorari. At that time, you had, at the beginning of the case, you had hundreds of plaintiffs who brought the case at the trial level who testified. The courts, each of those courts, the district court and the Court of Appeals, said the case was too old. It
right,
was stale.
Mm-hmm.
There was something called the statute of limitations that had passed, meaning that you should have filed this long ago. Well, we know back in the days of 1920, Jim Crow was up and coined.
Right.
You couldn't file anything if you were a black person. Everything was segregated.
Right.
And you couldn't file anything.
So bringing a case would have been
a waste of time.
Right.
So people didn't bring it. Finally, with the bravery of Johnny Cochran and the brilliance of Charles Oaktree, mm-hmm. and other lawyers, the case was brought.
Right.
They argued something called equitable tolling, which means that the court, as a court of equity, as a court of fairness, as a court of justice, can say, we're going to allow this case to proceed. Now, throughout these proceedings, interestingly enough, the court acknowledged the damage had been done. The court acknowledged that these people had been wronged. Black citizens had been brutal, had lost everything they had, had died, had been killed, had been murdered and slaughtered, but said there's nothing that we can do
mm-hmm.
because they should have brought their case earlier. They argued, well, you knew in 1960, which is why I brought up the commission,
mm-hmm.
the court specifically said, when you knew in 1960 that all these things had been done,
right.
you should have brought it back then.
That's the point that made me upset. You should have did it then.
You should have done it then.
Yeah.
But to organize and to even know your rights in this day and age, we're talking about people who are now 99. How old were they then?
Right.
And to know that they have that opportunity. When Charles Oglesree met, and he first met, he was down in Oklahoma in Tulsa giving a speech, giving a lecture, and he looked in a room and so he said, who are these old people? What is going on?
Uh-huh,
and they said, well, you know, they're talking about the Tulsa case and trying to see what can be done. He walked in the room, and when he walked in clear-eyed, he walked out with tears in his
mm-hmm.
eyes and said, something has to be done.
Right.
And that was the genesis of the lawsuit.
Right.
The lawsuit has been tossed out, the issue of reparations. Nothing has ever happened. There was another action that was brought before a different tribunal altogether. The American Convention on Human Rights allows people who believe that they've been denied their rights, who know it in this case, to come before the Inter-American Commission. That was done in 2011, and the argument was that these were international crimes which should be considered where there's a lack of an effective remedy in the United States or anywhere. Certainly, there has been no effective remedy. Gay McDougall, who is now a professor at Fordham Law School, argued that, made that argument in 2007. That petition is still pending. Mm-hmm. Nothing has been heard from anyone.
Well, you know,
so we're,
go on. I want to give. Okay, we, you know, we, Dr. Oaktree is the one that brought me into the case. He said, you got to get in this.
Yes.
But I want to know what happened at the I was at the Supreme Court when we filed. Will you tell them a little something about the Supreme Court before I go to Dr. Levy, because I do want the audience to hear from her, and then I want to try to take some calls. That when we filed, I was at the Supreme, I went with them to file at the Supreme Court. Would you tell our audience who's listening from all over the world what happened at the Supreme Court?
The Supreme Court affirmed, in essence, affirmed what the lower courts had said. They affirmed what the district court had said and what the Court of Appeals out of the Tenth Circuit had said, which is that this case is stale. The statute of limitations has, if they confirm this, has passed, and therefore you have no legal rights and no legal remedies in this court in this nation.
In other words, a black man don't have no right that a white man have to respect. That's what you're telling me in 2014.
I'm telling you that the court said we're not going to hear what these people have to say. We'll acknowledge that something happened, but we will not acknowledge that we have the legal right
mm-hmm.
to look at what's happened. Now, as you said, after that, there was an attempt to bring forth, and you were very much a part of that. I remember meeting you there as well.
Yes, yes.
Before the Black Caucus and also before Congress, where we had the late brilliant historian John Hope Franklin
mm-hmm.
Argue and Dr. Olivia Hooker before Congress to
mm-hmm.
try to get a bill passed that would bring some remedy, some reparations. This is something that was actually done in the Rosewood case
right.
out of Florida. Now, that case, you should know, too, the courts refused to hear that case.
We're going to do a piece on Rosewood. Gillen, you know you're so good. We're going to have you back also to try to pull all this stuff together when because I want to hear from Dr. Levy, too. But because I want to try
I
want to try to.
I appreciate you doing this because, you know, the key is not. The key is for us as a people
yes.
seeking justice, demanding
yes.
justice, to come together,
right.
to talk about this issue and to do something about it.
Right. I don't want you to hang up now. Because
oh, no. I'm
when
gonna
I talk to Dr. Olivia.
You know, you can tell I'm fired up.
Girl, you're so fired up, I'm going to have you back, too. Because, I mean, black folks talking about what can we do, the Dream Act, all this other stuff, and we have this. I know that there's a petition that they have that they want people to go online and sign and try to help.
I'm urging everybody to do that today on the 93rd anniversary of the Tulsa, Oklahoma riots, I'm urging all of your listeners around the world to sign that petition, to write to your congresspersons. It doesn't take much. Our parents did so much with such little, and we have so much. We have the Internet. We have Twitter. We have Google. We have Facebook. We have access, and we have so much. We do such little with it.
Okay.
We need to
tell them what the petition is, and then I'm going to Dr. Olivia. I got to hear from Dr. Dr. Hooker was so good. But I want you to tell them what the petition is. Dr. Olivia is so good at the Supreme Court and all the other places. I just love her. Gail, tell her what the petition is.
I'm going to have to find that.
It's online, I know, but we'll tell them before we go. And Dr. Olivia was in the service. She was a teacher. She was she taught in elementary school. She also taught at a university. Am I correct?
Yes.
Okay. Dr. Olivia, how old are you now?
I'm 99 plus.
And I want the audience to know that she's very articulate, very much. She knows. And most of the Tulsa survivors, they understood, they knew, they told their story, and this country is allowing them just to die off. I miss Mr. Clark. Dr. Clark, he was just something else, and Miss Finger, and as they're moving on. So tell us what you remember on that day, Dr. Olivia.
Well, this was a very great shock to me because I didn't know about prejudice because the only people I had met that were not African-American wanted my father to buy something from them, and so they acted very human and generous. And so I was unaware that the Statue of Liberty was not put there for me. And that is what was so very crucifying to me, because it was a new idea. I really had believed in brotherly and sisterly love all my 6 years of life. And then all of a sudden, that belief was crushed, that the Constitution didn't refer to me when they said life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness. It didn't pertain to me, and that really sort of crushed my little six-year-old soul.
So what happened on that day, Dr. Olivia? You were six. What do you remember happening on that day?
Well, there was shooting and bombing, and airplanes came over and dropped incendiaries to start the roofs to burning, and they bombed the schools. Well, we couldn't see the school from our house, but it was bombed down to just little pebbles, and it had been a big school. Those things were so distressing to a child who believed that we were all one people in the United States. And so I cannot tell you how it really messed up my life and the lives of all the other people who had never aggressed against anyone.
So what do you go for shelter during that time when they start bombing, Dr. Olivia? What did you do? And what did your parents do? What did y'all do?
Well, my mother very practically said, we have to eat no matter what, and she was cooking. So when the mob came in the house and saw the pots and pans, you know, full of breakfast food, it seemed to anger them more that somebody would hide their children. We were hiding under the table and cook breakfast. So they took the food out and dumped it in the backyard. And then they came back and took the biscuits out of the oven and took them out in the backyard. And see, these children cowering under the table, we were, saw their breakfast go out, these dreadful people who were destroying, and what they were doing was destroying what they didn't want, but taking and stealing what they did want, and that was just amazing to to me, and something I won't forget, I guess.
Did any of your people get hurt? What happened to your mother at that point, your family members? When you was on the table, what did they do to your mother?
Well, my mother, when the mob came down from the militia, see, the black people had called the militia in the thought that the militia would be on our side, that they would take care of us. And so they took possession.
The militia meaning the government coming, the troops.
The government militia, yes, that's what they called them. They didn't call them state troopers then.
Mm-hmm.
And they sent down their folk and said, you got to get those kids out of the house. And my mother said, I'll go up and talk to them. So she went right straight up to the lieutenant and said to him, I have to put more water on my house so it won't burn. And I'm not going to leave until I put more water on the house.
Mm-hmm.
And she plunked the baby down beside the lieutenant of the government and said, here, you watch my baby while I go and put more water on
strong
my
mama.
House.
Uh-huh.
And she sailed down the hill again to the house and, you know, put more buckets of water on all the windowsills. So the house would be, she thought, would be safe. But a gentleman who was in the crowd limped over, probably a veteran, and said to her, if you'll stop preaching at these people, because she was scolding the people who brought their children to watch the destruction of innocent victims who were a different color. And so she was preaching at them and saying they'll suffer unto the third and fourth generation. So this gentleman said, if you will stop. The people said, make that woman shut up. She's scaring our children.
Mm-hmm.
And they had brought their children to watch the desecration. And so that is really a depraved point of view.
Okay.
And when the gentleman said, madam, when the mob gets out of your house, I'll go down and do what I can to put out the blaze if you stop your oration. So she said, all right. She went back down to get us. And the gentleman apparently did. We could see that blazes had been put out. When we came back home, the house was stucco, and so it was still standing. But we could see that someone had tried to put out every flame, so we still had shelter when we came back. But
so many didn't have shelter, did they?
Some people. Oh, nobody. Practically nobody had shelter except people who didn't live in a neighborhood that they reached. And we were grateful that we still had a roof over our heads. But
Dr. Olivia, I remember doing some of the hearing. They said that the planes was dropping bombs on these houses. It was coming down like boom, boom, boom. They was up in the sky dropping bombs all over the place and taking people
yes.
and putting them in wagons and putting them in a fence, and they killed people. They just really was. And I think I remember one of the survivors saying that one of the riders who came in at one of the clans and said, y'all got all of this? Where y'all get this stuff from? Y'all living like this? So they really made, so they were very upset that blacks was living like that. I remember one of the survivors talking about that.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
That might have been Dr. Hooker talking about her Caruso records.
Maybe so, Gail, because I've heard so many of the survivors. Dr. Hooker was just something else. Dr. Hooker, you were just really something. So what happened to you at that point? What did y'all do?
What happened to whom?
Yeah, what did you do after the all the bombing had happened? And I want the audience to know that when the militia came, the National Guard came into the black community. Black folks thought they came to help. They came to destroy them. They shot, they killed, they did something to do. So what did, I know now the Stratford Hotel, I know John Rogers, that was his grandfather. He comes from the Stratford family. His mother was a part of the Stratford family. And a lot of folks ran away and hid and didn't even want nobody to know that they were from Tulsa. They some of them changed their names. They ran away. They were really that frightened, was they not?
Yes, a lot of people left, but no one that I knew personally left. They were all determined to stay there and rebuild their homes and their businesses and show that they were entitled and legally entitled to have a good life.
Mm-hmm.
So, well, you know, I do believe, you know, and what you're referring to, people like John Hope Franklin's father, B.C. Franklin, who was a very prominent attorney.
Right.
At that time. In fact, he was one of the ones who led the charge. It was a committee called the Exchange that said that they were going to rebuild the area, you know, the Greenwood, Archer, and Pine, the Gap Band.
Right.
The Gap Band. Well, the Gap Band is the band from Tulsa, Oklahoma, and they named it after Greenwood, Archer, and Pine, the Gap Band. Well, at that time, way before then, back at the time
right.
of B.C., Franklin, the town came up with a plan, and they said, well, you know, we will rebuild this area, but we're going to put in some restrictions. So you have to have certain kinds of bricks. And what they were going to do, those restrictions were going to make it impossible,
mm-hmm.
prohibitively impossible for the black community to build itself back up. And, in fact, the plan was for that area to be strictly commercial, non-residential, and would have meant no blacks would have been there. B.C. Franklin was the lawyer who was able to defeat that effort.
I remember seeing him in a tent.
Did
he put a tent up? And he was a lawyer. He set up a tent or something for people to come in to.
He kept that from happening. But, you know, at the time, right after the riots, families were dispersed. You know, men were afraid to stay there. I do believe, and Dr. Hooker, you can explain more about this. Mr. White from the NAACP came down, and he was so fair-looking that they, in fact, thought that he was white, and he actually got a lot of information about what was going on and was able to take it back. Because black men were being dispersed, they were taken away, they were jailed. Some of them fled. I think, Dr. Hooker, your father, didn't your father move away at some point from Tulsa? Your family moved away. Your father stayed, but your family, maybe you should tell us about what happened, how the riots impacted your family and caused for the migration of your family.
Yes, my father was determined that we should have a school to go to, and since they had bombed our schools, we didn't have any. And so they decided they were able. He found out that they had not destroyed his safe. It was so big they couldn't steal it. And so he found his war bombs month, and he and mother decided, well, we'll take the war bonds and we'll go to sympathetic black churches in Boston and various cities and tell the black people what happened, and maybe they will send not money but clothes and blankets and things, which those churches did, churches in Washington and St. Petersburg and Petersburg, and sent what they call refugee barrels of clothing and shoes and things for people to be able to have clothes to put on. And then my parents took the other half of their bonds. What they didn't use when Dad and Mr. Gregg went on a speaking tour to tell the black churches in the world what had happened, then they were able to pay down on a little house in Topeka, Kansas, and they had the children, all the children in our family, went to live in Topeka, Kansas, and go to school there. And there were there were four schools that had African-American teachers in the town, but you were supposed to go to your neighborhood school, and the neighborhood school didn't have a single African-American teacher. So my brother and sister were placed in the neighborhood school, but when my mother said she would take me, I said, no, I won't go unless I have a teacher that looks like me, because I was too afraid.
Yeah.
And so the Menninger Clinic with this famous psychiatrist told my mother's doctor to let me stay at home, and that I would get bored because I had been in school for 2 years already from age four. And they said, she'll get so bored she'll want to go to school, to the neighborhood school. But I didn't get bored. I stayed home. And they finally decided, well, we have to persuade her. And so they let me go with a next-door neighbor who was a teacher. She was also a Seminole Indian. And she said, I'll take Olivia to my school where I teach. And that's how I got to go to Buchanan School, which was an excellent school. But it was a mile away, and we had to walk. But there weren't buses for us in those days.
Okay.
However,
I got 8 minutes here. I'm sorry, the board was lit up. Y'all forgive me because I didn't come to the board, but I thought this was very important. I'm going to have Dr. Olivia and Gail back again because they had so much. And next time I have them longer than I had them today. But we have 8 minutes. What I need to know from both Gail and Dr. Olivia, Dr. Olivia, can you take just a few minutes because I only have 8 minutes. Can you tell me how do you feel today? What do you think because you have not had reparations, and what do you think about today in terms of where we are and how you feel because they have not compensated them?
I won't give up that the conscience of America will wake up and try in some way to do the right thing. And I will not lose my complete faith that we as a people can help them to remember that doing right is the right thing to do.
Okay. Gail, and
yeah.
I only have a few minutes. I got to have you back because this just wasn't enough time. And the board was lit up, and I have to apologize to my audience. We will have Gail and Dr. Levy back so they can take questions. This is very important because it's anniversary. Gail, how many have died since we started this?
Yeah, I can tell you this. We started out with hundreds, and we're now down to maybe two dozen of the survivors.
Mm-hmm.
Dr. Hooker is one of the older survivors at the age of 99 now. So Before They Die is a movie that I urge all of the listeners. You can go online and look at the movie Before They Die. You can see how to get it, how to look at it, and please do that. It's a very compelling movie to watch.
It's
appropriate for all ages. Young people should understand it, you know, because it's time for us to pass the baton,
right,
to make sure that young people see it, not just to continue to watch it ourselves, but if you have a group of kids, have them watch it. Once they start looking at it, they will be pulled into it, and then they can pass the baton. The second thing I would urge everyone to do, and you had mentioned this before, is to sign the petition. There is a bill that was, it's H.R. 98, the John Hope Franklin Tulsa Greenwood Race Riot Claims Accountability Act of 2013. It was introduced by Congressman John Conyers sometime January 2013. But remember, that's H.R. 98, John Hope Franklin, mm-hmm, Accountability Act claim. And that is a bill that we need to get passed. It's going to allow the survivors and their descendants to get some form of reparations. This is what was done in the Rosewood case.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing happened from the courts. Because, you know, we have to remember we have a system of government that supposedly works, but we've got to make it work. You
right.
can have a beautiful Rolls Royce in your driveway, but if you don't drive it, you don't know how smooth it is.
Right.
We have got to make sure that our vehicles of change are working. We have either the president, we have three branches of government, executive, the president, the Congress, and the courts. If one doesn't work, let's take it to the next. The
That's
court
right.
hasn't worked here, so let's take it to Congress.
Gail, I'm going to have you and Dr.
Congress
Olivia back on. I'm going to have you back on again.
That you can go online and sign the petition. I just signed it today and put a note on it.
Mm-hmm.
93rd anniversary. All you need to do, listeners, is go online and look at moveon.org, MOVEON.org.
Mm-hmm.
And you push in HR 98, and the petition will come up, and all you have to do is sign your name.
Yeah,
I ask everyone to do that. And to make sure everybody that they know does it. Today is the 93rd anniversary. This is our responsibility. This is our opportunity.
I want to thank you, Gail, attorney. And I want to tell the community all of the things that you do for civil rights and how much you've given and how hard you've also worked. When I was talking to Dr. Ogletree the other day, I talked about you, how hard. It's people like you that folks might not know that I've been fighting on behalf of our people. And I want to thank you for being on the case and being who you are. Dr. Olivia, at 99 years old, I want to thank you for still fighting and not giving up. And we're going to continue to fight with you. I do apologize to my audience for not taking any calls. But I'm going to have you back on real soon, Dr. Olivia and Gail. This is Dorothy Wright Tillman, Coffee Tea, and a Conversation with Me. We're here every Saturday from 6 to 8, trying to educate, trying to have a conversation about what's going on in the black community.
All right.
Until next week, this is Dorothy Wright Tillman saying, and y'all hold on, Gail and Dr. Lee. This is Dorothy Wright Tillman saying, reparations now. For reparations for black people, especially the reparations for Tulsa. I'll see you next week.
Thank you so much.
Hold on, Dr. Gail.
Most of the happening was built by us. Every stoplight is seen a gallery. everything you think they did. It was built by us. Yeah.
Of Chicago and the voice of the nation, 1690 WVON, Berwyn, Chicago. The talk of Chicago and the voice of the nation is 1690 WVON, Berwyn.